on 1116 SEN. Hungry for Sport with Kevin Bartlett for Penfold Holden, celebrating 50 years of the Penfold family.
9:07, good morning and welcome to the program. Now, James Hird was never questioned as a player. He was simply too good. He's one of the game's greatest players, and his ability to coach the Bombers has never been in question until now. His coaching career has been dogged by the Asada investigation, which still has the wider appeal to go. But fans, supporters and critics have now directed their attention to the Dons' on-field performances, playing list and tactics. Going to a game without a recognised ruckman has raised concerns, especially when the club recruited a 50-game big man in Jonathan Giles, who clearly can't get a game. The pace of the team is now being questioned, as is the re-signing of the ageing Paul Chapman, who has been a sub and subbed off in the past 2 weeks. Then there is Carlisle. Should he play forward or back, and should he switch with Hurley, is another ongoing question. And the style of play, which produces a lot of possessions but little else. Hurd has been forever, it seems, under the microscope. Can he respond is the next big question. I'm KB. That's my take.
I would say they're probably one of the bottom four sides of the competition right now in terms of how they're playing right now.
Why wouldn't you at least have a look to see whether you've got a happy player at one end and you know that Hurley is a competitive beast?
They're not bringing players from underneath pushing up. They might have to do it in the next few weeks to try and get some liveliness about them.
I love Hurley as a defender. I'm not necessarily sort of saying that that's, the way that it should be from a Hurley point of view. This is about a team, and the team has actually played better and won more games when it was the other way around.
They're a bit flat. They're slow through the middle. They can't score. They don't draw the footy in the front half of the ground.
They've lost complete confidence in their own ability to be able to execute a game plan. They became very defensively minded in the way they play, and now they're playing this really over-cautious brand of football. They just invite pressure because of the way they're moving the ball.
9429 1116 is always our famous talkback number, 0433981116 if you want to tweet at Kevin Bartlett 29, or you can tweet at Hungry for Sport. Just hearing there the thoughts of Tim Watson, Dermot Brereton and Terry Wallace discussing the plight of the Essendon Football Club. You can have your say, 9429 1116. Coming up, Patrick Smith is about to join us, always taking your calls on sports hottest topics. It's always your forum to fire up, and his famous gibberish of the week. We'll shoot across to the States. Mark Leishman will join us. Of course, having a crack at winning the US Open Golf Championship. 8 Australians taking their spot in that field. Zappas will join us. Michael Cipone, we've got the Socceroos, of course, and our World Cup qualifier coming up. Get something off your chest, always your opportunity to fire up. Nigel Purchase with all the NBA finals, and then, of course, Dr. Turf, quirky and very antagonistic from 11. But coming up next, Patrick Smith.
Any chance you just don't worry about the words and start with showing your intent with some actions? Now, the bottomless pit of idiocy behind those comments by both men is both chilling and disturbing. If you're harassed, short of King hitting, go for it. Now, that is insane. So inappropriate. If we didn't have WADA, we wouldn't have sport, because nobody would believe one thing that they saw on a football field, a track field, a swimming pool, anything.
On Hungry for Sport, Patrick Smith for Supergroups. Kubota Excavator Finance deals on now.
Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning, Kevin. You're looking very well this morning. Have you just discovered the secret to something, have you?
No, not really.
No?
Not really.
Didn't you tell me you're playing golf yesterday?
Yeah, well, I did have...
Found another secret to
nine
golf.
Nine holes yesterday. I did find the secret to the game. It's a very boring game, Patrick, once you know the secret to the game. I might even take that up with Mark Leishman.
So you would have won easily?
Well, I didn't win. I didn't say I won.
Oh, right.
I've just come away buoyed.
When you do talk to Mark Leishman, Kevin, there's some interesting stuff about this golf course, Chambers Bay. Mark Hayes, who... was the Herald Sun golf writer, is now with Golf Australia and is over there. He's written a piece, and it says that to differentiate the green from the fairway, the greens from the fairway at this course, they've just dotted white little dots around the green to tell the golfer they're on the green. That's a bit unusual.
Well, at least it's helpful.
It's helpful, but boy, what does it say about the greens? It must be...
And there's a par 4 that's about 540 yards long. So
not a problem.
Not quite certain you've got to hit to actually get there in two, so you can actually have a crack.
Knock down 5-iron off the tee, Kevin.
Knock down 5-iron.
Just try and keep your 7-iron under the wind.
Now, Patrick, James Hurd, for the very first time is under pressure as a coach. I've just been watching over the last few days and over the last couple of weeks with the Bombers losing five out of six games, that all of a sudden people are starting to question the tactics, the playing style. You know, is he missing Bomber Thompson or Simon Goodwin in the coaching box? We've seen him down on the boundary line without being mic'd up to those up in the coaching box as well. There's the recruiting of players that don't seem to be played. There's also the recruiting of older players, which can't really seem to hold a spot in the side or certainly can't see out a game. There's a lot of questions now. So for the very first time, it seems that, you know, put Asada and Wada apart,
yep.
You know, the focus is on James Hird now as a coach. And can he respond? I'd like to ask the Essendon fans, you know, how they think James is going this year as the coach. And maybe have you got any advice that you'd like to see the Essendon coach produce over the next few weeks?
Well, that's absolutely right. And listening to Tim Dermott and Terry Wallace just after your take, I don't think that will do a lot for James's confidence. But I think we are at a stage now where Wada has been put to one side and we're looking at exactly where Essendon, the football team, is. And we're trying to say, well, Wada won't be... Let's say Wada's not having an effect, or if it is having an effect, let's see how James is going about coaching. I think he's drawing critics. Whether that's right or wrong, time will tell, but they've only won one out of their last six, and I think the win before that was against St Kilda by 2 points. So that's an awful record for James. He certainly doesn't have Bomber Thompson in the box with him now, and maybe that's telling.
And Goodwin.
They're not with him. So
he's got Harvey now.
He has Harvey, and he's got Neil Craig and...
Mark Neild.
What we're seeing now is the coach who was given the 2-year extension, we're now seeing him being judged on purely his ability to get the best out of those players. And there are odd things have happened. I mean, you don't go and get Giles, and then when you get him, don't use him because you say, well, he's he can't cover ground.
He's not athletic enough.
Mm. Well, when he didn't become unathletic at Essendon, he was what he was up in Sydney. So I think that the jury is really out now and looking at James. On that, Kevin, just on Wada, now that Wada's obviously going to go into a third year. I don't think it'll be resolved before next year. I think it would be reprehensible if any of those Essendon players were suspended or missed a match if they were found guilty by the Court of Arbitration of Sport. Because to have this hanging over them for 3 years, not all of their own making, by the way, for 3 years of a working life as a footballer of possibly five, I think to suspend them would be grossly unjust.
So why the appeal, Patrick, by Wada, if it's going to be unjust if players are suspended? Is it just so they can actually say to the world that we've gone through with an investigation, even though it's taken a long time, we've been proven correct if they are found guilty, but under the circumstances, we're not going to suspend players?
Most unusual case, Kevin, that Wada's probably had to confront, given that there's 34 players in one team, the vagaries of what was happening at Essendon, no records kept...
But why appeal if there's no suspension?
Because they need to show that they will follow every case right through to its last moment. Mm-hmm. And, okay, we find them guilty, but we're going to backdate it and we're not going to suspend them, but we find them guilty. I think that's appropriate, that... They're showing to the world, we will not ease up on these things. We will follow them through. But we also have a sense of what's fair and just. And if 3 and a bit years, you've been the subject of a study and an investigation, tribunals, appeals, then another appeal to sport, arbitration of sport... we think that we're going to take all that into account, and we reckon you're guilty. You've served a provisional suspension already, so you've been suspended already in a provisional sense. We're not going to take any more action against you. I think that that would be a pretty fair outcome. Now, take in mind, of course, that there was evidence given in the Dank tribunal meeting to assess penalty. And there's discussion there of giving them horse drugs, Kevin.
Mm.
So that's why you've got to follow it through. But I think the players, at the end of this, will have copped enough. Now, that is different to what the assessment that now has to be made on James Hurd and the list, and where are they going, and can he coach, and is he the right man to take them forward?
Okay, I'd like to ask Essendon fans, what would you like to see for the rest of the season for your side in terms of players and maybe playing style, also positioning of players as well? Michael Warner, front page of the Herald Sun today, the AFL secret trial exposed. The 43-page document reveals, says the tribunal chairman David Jones, who cleared the players of doping, suggested the club swallowed Danks' credentials to gain a competitive advantage, and the AFL accused the former Essendon sports scientist of having a complete disregard for the health and well-being of others. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Patrick Smith is joining us. You can always set the sporting agenda. What's on your mind in sport? 9429 1116.
I don't think they can keep James Hurd as coach and say we've got to now go back to the draft and look to the future.
So you reckon they can still win a flag with this list?
I would be staggered if at the end of this year Essendon said we are in some sort of reprogramming, reinvigorating of the list, just short of a rebuild, with James Hurd at the helm.
But don't you say you need to know where you're at?
Yes, and it's a brave decision, Glenn, to say that we're rebuilding. This hasn't worked. What we've done the last 2 to 3 years hasn't worked. We're starting again.
Yeah, the thoughts of David King. Doesn't think the Bombers win a flag with the current list, and that was on Pure Footy last week, of course, Daniel Huffett.
Might not have worked, Kevin, but I think the real question is, can it work? You know, if they make the changes that, you know, Terry and Tim threw up about, you know, where you play Carlisle, what do you do with Hurley?
Put in a ruckman.
Yeah.
Change your style of play.
Exactly.
A bit more direct, less possessions. Try and make something happen with those possessions. Try and get some quicker players through the midfield. Play some of the younger players that they have got running around. And I'm certain Essendon fans can tell us if there's some younger players. Like Sean Edwards came in last week and played
a pretty good
game. Yep. He's been in the wings there for a while. A lot of people have been suggesting, why hasn't he got a game before now? Are there other Sean Edwards there in the reserve side for the Essendon Football Club that can come in and maybe add some of that pace? I mean, Collier's terrific. He is super quick.
Well, he looks quick in the Essendon side.
Well, he does.
Kevin. He mightn't be able to run faster than the steamroller, because we only see him running against Essendon players. Mm.
Yes, that's true. Mark is in Brisbane. G'day, Mark.
Hey, Kevin. How are you? Thanks very much for taking me call, mate.
Pleasure. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I'd just like to make a few comments. I think one of the problems, our whole family's been Essendon for 65 years. We've been following the club, and it's just a demise at the moment. My point of view is that I'd just like to say it's recruitment, recruitment, recruitment. At the moment, it just stands out what the problem is that we've got players there who cannot win their own football. It's basic as that. They can't win their own football. We've got too many receivers there. We've got a handful of players there that can win their own football, like Watson, Goddard, these sort of guys. And the other thing the other remark I'd like to make is they don't know how to read the game. They don't know how to read the play itself. They're always in the wrong position. Like, I look at yourself, KB, you're a champion of reading the game. You know, and person your size, you always knew where the ball was going to go, which your teammates, which side of their foot they were going to kick on, all these sort of things.
Well, it's Mark, you're pointing to a lack of talent, essentially, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. And, like, I played myself. I played up in Queensland, the QAFL. And I'm 59 now, but I played, I was 36. I'm 5'3". 5'3", I played with Jezelenko and Mick Nolan up here. Ronnie Weirmouth played in stateside. But, like KB, I could read the game and I could win my own football. But it's just a demise at the moment. My father would turn in his grave. He was with the Essendonians for 50 years. He was president of the Gold Coast League, and like we're just grounded with Essendon Football Club. And we had people like Dick Reynolds come around to our place when I was a kid, and And it's just an absolute... We're just shell-shocked at the moment, our supporters and everyone. It's
Something needs to happen.
I really feel it. Sorry?
Something needs to happen.
It does, mate. You know, and like I said, a lot of it's to do with the recruitment, as I said.
Yep.
I don't know so much with the coaching staff. I think James Hurd's done a fair job. But I think it's more on the recruitment side of things. The player we recruit, we haven't won a premiership since 2000. It's 15 years ago now.
Well, they lost some draft choices, didn't they, Pat, during the
Asada
situation?
That's the worst penalty you can get, really.
But James Hurd has been under a lot of pressure himself, Pat, and even though he appears to have stood up to it very well, we've seen him week after week virtually doing all those doorstop interviews and then, of course, going overseas and then coming back. He's been under enormous pressure, irrespective of which side of the fence you want to stand with James Hurd.
Now, that's true.
But he has been under enormous pressure, and, I mean, the side not playing well is just going to add to that pressure, so it's going to take a remarkable effort by James Hurd to overcome all of this.
Well, sometimes when you look at him, and especially when he's on the boundary, he just looked a bit bemused or beaten up, or, you know, it might have just been one week where it just got a little bit too much for him. It certainly got too, this is the Geelong game, I guess, got too much for the players. Maybe they can shrug that off.
Lee's in Essendon. G'day, Lee.
Yeah, how you going, Kev?
Good, thanks.
Just I wanted to talk about... two things. First of all, we miss Ryder terribly.
Yes, Paddy Ryder's a good player.
And with the Hurley, with them talking about changing Hurley and Carlisle, you know, what, 5 years ago, we had Carlisle just killing it in defence and Hurley couldn't kick a goal. So now, 5 years later, you got Hurley that's absolutely killing it. You know, he'd be around All Australian, I think. And Carlisle just can't kick goals. So I wouldn't be moving Hurley down to the forward line. And you got to remember, you're talking about Essendon here. We will come through this, mate.
Okay, well, a lot of confidence here. Paddy Ryder is a bigger loss than maybe a lot of people expected. I know at the time when he left, you know, some Essendon, you know, fans, you know, sending through messages and coming on and having a chat about it, said they could overcome Paddy Ryder. But is a bigger loss than expected?
Oh, I think it's hurting them, definitely. While he was a pinch hitter up forward, he would have answered their ruck problems.
On Lee's point about Jake Carlisle, Bomber Thompson discussed this, whether it's worth putting Carlisle up for a trade. This is on Fox Footy before the Essendon game on the weekend.
I would probably think that you'd try and keep him, but you wouldn't pay over the odds for him. You wouldn't go too far into your barrel and take other people's money that you plan to give them to give to Jake. You'd hope that he'd just stay for the right amount, and you hope that the right amount is being offered.
So there was Bomber Thompson having a chat about Carlisle.
Well, he's got an investment there, hasn't he? He's got an investment in Carlisle because he was the one who persevered and said, I'm going to make you a forward.
He was adamant he wanted to make him into a forward.
Yeah, so he's got an investment there.
That's interesting because when James Hurd was coaching, Carlisle played down back and Hurley played forward. And when Bomber took over, he was very strong and he wanted Hurley to play back and Carlisle to play forward. Yet when James Hurd came back, it seemed that he went with that status quo.
Yeah.
Because originally, you know, when James had, you know, the two of them, he was strong on Carlisle being down back, and then he was a pinch hitter, wasn't he? When, if they were struggling, he'd go forward and jump up and take a mark and kick a goal. But James Hurd had him as a backman.
Well, the one thing that Essendon's got working for them, Kevin, is the defence. I mean, I think it's a good defensive six that they can put in there. I don't know that you would interrupt that by sending Carlisle back and taking Hurley out. I mean, if you've got something that works, at least keep that intact.
But you've got 22 players and you want to just, you know, spread them around the ground, Pat, to what gets you the best result. You know, sometimes, you know, Carlisle going back might play well. Hurley may play a little bit better at centre-half forward and it might balance out. Might be a win-win situation. We'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll fly through your calls, 9429 1116. What's on your mind in sport?
We'll decipher that in-house and we'll talk about it. But it's irrelevant. It didn't get done. So it's my responsibility. And you lose the game. So, yeah, we'll talk through why it happened. And I know why it happened. But those sort of things will stay in-house. And, you know, we've just got to do a better job.
Paul Roos, of course, on AFL 360, knows about the breakdown of communication on Sunday. He knows why it happened, Pat, but he's going to keep that to himself.
Well, I think he was a bit burnt after the criticism he got from the Collingwood game, Kevin, where he said his players were deaf or weren't listening, or I think that there was a bit of feedback there that suggested he probably needs to keep that sort of stuff in-house.
Patrick, you've written an exclusive article today in The Australian along with Greg Venom Denham that clubs, there's a lot of clubs out there a little bit dubious over this AFL tax with the football department. In fact, Brian Cook has even suggested that he hopes that there's no creative accounting taking place. And it seems to me that you're pointing the finger at Collingwood and Fremantle.
Well, no, not pointing the finger, but they're the ones that are making the biggest, have to make the biggest cut to get down under the soft cap of the football department. I think we're all agreed that if we can get the footy department spend equal on all 18 clubs, then we've got a much better chance of having a more even competition. Now, previous to this, Fremantle and Collingwood have been able to spend up very big
figures
on their footy department. Now, they've got to come back in to get under this soft cap. Now, $2.5 million is the figure that Fremantle says it will take out. Collingwood says $1.9. I think Hawthorn's around $1.1 and West Coast just under $1 million. Now, these are awfully big figures to take out of a budget that's $11 million.
But reading your article today, it seems that there's an undertone to it that maybe the AFL or others within the industry are not convinced that this money is coming out.
Well, that's correct. That's the whole thrust
there's
of the article.
There's some creative accountancy is taking place here. You even tell us that Gil McLachlan has warned yesterday that the auditing of the club figures is going to be absolutely meticulous. This is something that will be monitored very, very seriously.
Oh, yeah. And if you pay over the cap, you'll pay a tax. But if you try and manipulate the figures, in other words, try and hide money that you're spending on your football cap, you'll get wrapped over the knuckles more than wrapped over the knuckles by the commission. You could lose draft picks. You'll get heavily fined. It's at the discretion of the commission what they do to you. So it's a very serious issue, and it's up to the if clubs are going to be competitive, they have to be reassured that all the clubs are pulling back to the draft, to the salary cap of the footy cap of $9.3 million.
Well, Brian Cook says he has reduced the Cats football department expenditure this year by $300,000 down to $9 million. We're talking about the Dockers $2.5 million and the Magpies 1.9, and that's when he goes on to say that he hopes that this soft cap does not become an exercise in creative accounting rather than clubs diligently adhering to the spirit of the soft cap.
Yeah, and that's the whole point of this. Some clubs are scared that other clubs with a big football department spend that have to get down to 9.3 will try and wash it through other departments in the clubs. Now, I put that to Eddie Maguire yesterday, and you can see in his quote in the paper today, he didn't take it kindly, Kevin,
no?
that anybody would suggest Collingwood would not play by the rules and pay whatever excess it had. It doesn't want to have an excess. That's why it's pulling 1.9 out. But that's not to say there are still clubs suspicious that clubs can pull, in the case of Fremantle, $2.5 million out of a budget of around $11 million, their budget of $11 million, in the space of 6 months.
Okay, Eddie does say in your article at a recent board meeting, it was devastating. He said, we just cut, cut, cut and cut. And I think it's wrong. I've never seen a business cut away its way to success before. Also, before we go back to our callers, there's an article in the Age today discussing the AFL Working Party is contemplating changes to the drafting system that is currently in place, which could threaten players' rights to veto a trade. Richmond coach Damien Hardwick was in the coach's box on Friday night on SEM. He had this to say in regards to players trading, free agency, and more need to be done. There's a lot more needs to be done to induce off-season trading in the game at the moment.
I think from our point of view, I'd happily reduce the free agency a year. But to get that, I think the players have got to give up their right to veto a trade. From that point of view, we've also got to free up future markets with regard to trade.
How would that give the lower clubs more dibs on the good players, though?
Well, the lower clubs have got the better picks for example, St Kilda, in theory, I'm probably speaking a little bit out of school here, but for them to convince a player to come to their club is probably a little bit hard at the moment, because they're probably going to be a little bit of time till they get good. Now, granted, they've had some outstanding games this year and they're well and truly on the right track, don't get me wrong. But trying to convince a ready-made player that wants to play in a flag to go there at this stage of their career is incredibly hard.
What do the fans think about that? What he's saying, if they want to come down from free agency from 8 years to 6 years, then something's got to go back to the clubs, and the clubs would like to be able to just, tap a player on the shoulder, Pat, and say, listen, we've done a deal with St Kilda, and you're no longer playing at Richmond, and you can't veto this deal. You've got to go and play at St Kilda. Well, what do the fans think about that?
Yeah, well, I think the thing that we've identified through free agency is it does appear, on the surface, harder to get good players to go down the ladder, to clubs down the ladder. And they're the ones that need the good players. And he's saying, well,
veto that.
Yes. Yeah. If the player doesn't have the veto, he just goes to that club down the list.
Well, you turn up at training and they call you and they say, listen, we've done a deal today with St Kilda.
Yeah.
And you're off to St Kilda. We've got a taxi out the front, and grab your boots because you're playing at St Kilda.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's the answer, no. But I
think... What do the fans think? Would the fans like to see that in AFL football? Yeah. That happened once before, you know, in the game. Remember Russell Green? Russell Green was at Hawthorn. He was at St Kilda, and then next minute he was playing at Hawthorn.
That's right, yep.
Even turned up at the ground and he had other players saying you're at the wrong ground. Yes. He said, no, I'm playing for Hawthorn now. No, I'm not playing with St Kilda.
Yep.
Okay, well, the fans tell us, would you like that to be in the game, where you wake up one day and you just find you've got a new player at your club, or one of your players has just been told he's playing for Richmond?
What you just said is one of the most insanely idiotic things I have ever heard. Everyone in this room is now dumber for having listened to it. Just shut
your mouth. Yes, Patrick's famous gibberish of the week. And, of course, you can always agree or disagree with Patrick's famous nomination, named after Tora Bright.
Now, Kevin, I'm a great admirer of callers of football. I certainly couldn't possibly do it. I think you're a genius.
Oh, there's a butt coming up here somewhere.
No. I think you're a genius because you don't even look at the numbers, do you? You just know the players. Mm-hmm. That's not easy. Mm-hmm. What I don't like, Kevin,
yes.
I guess it's a but.
But?
It's but when commentators jump all over an umpiring decision without really knowing whether it's right or wrong, just having this instinct that they had as a player that the umpire must be wrong anyway. And so what happens is you end up with embarrassing stuff like this.
In comes the support, swallows it in an understar. He goes head first at Goods.
No,
can't pay that. You cannot pay that. Worst decision of the year. It is just a horrendous decision and it ruins a good game. What else are you supposed to do?
Well,
that was Luke Darcy's commentary of Andrew Swallow on the ball. It was interesting just then with Luke calling. He said Swallow goes head first at Goods in the commentary.
Yes.
So if he goes head first at Goods, then he's got to handball it or kick it.
He's got a problem. Mm. Yeah. Well, of course, Wayne Campbell came out and said that decision was absolutely correct. So Luke, in his enthusiasm, and as a former member of the Laws of the Game Committee, stuffed it up.
Say that again.
Gibberish of the week.
Michael joins us from Epping. G'day, Michael. Wants to talk about the Bombers.
Yeah, g'day, boys. Thanks for your time.
Pleasure.
Now, just on the Bombers, pre-season, I was quite bullish about them having a fairly solid campaign, finishing top eight, possibly winning a final. And probably from round one, I could tell the cracks already starting to appear, and you can probably put it down to the fact that they didn't have some pre-season games, but they're elite athletes. They train all season. They run all pre-season. So I don't really see that as an excuse, but you saw that coming in from the third quarter of the Sydney game, third quarter of the Hawthorn game, last quarter of the Carlton game. It's sort of flowed on throughout the season. And since then, it's basically the lack of intensity and effort has actually stopped completely. Then I have a look at the list as a whole. Players like Dempsey, Bell Chambers, Zarakis, they've stopped developing. I think they've just got to a certain level and that's all they can offer. Howlett's the same. Stanton's going to give you the same thing week in, week out. J Taffy Cooney recruited solely for the purpose of if the players are rubbed out, that's why they're in the side. Gibbet Ambrose, they're stuffed again this year. So it might have something to do with the coaches, not just Turdy, but you know, Neil Craig and also Mark Neal, they didn't really offer much of senior coaches. So to have them as assistants to Herd, I don't think it's actually achieving much.
Well, I reckon they've got some good players. I think at the start of the season, most people looked at Essendon's list and said it was a pretty good list. They had some good players there. I suppose, Patrick, it's just whether or not, you know, all the the pressures over the last 2 years, has it stopped some of this development of the Essendon Football Club at the moment?
Yeah, that would play a part. But has Dempsey finished as a footballer anyway? Has he run his race?
Well, I suppose he's got to prove to people that he can play good quality football on a consistent basis.
Yeah.
He's had a number of injuries. He seems to be a player that gets a number of injuries and he in and out of the side for various reasons. So he's always appeared to have a lot of talent, but maybe it's passed him by.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe his time in AFL football is done with.
Because I can remember when Bomber Thompson was there last year. Bomber Thompson was bullish that they had a side that could win a flag. He was on record as saying that.
Well, they got into the finals.
Yes. So, I mean, obviously there's some talent down there now. Has in 12 months, has that talent, you know, been wasted? Or is there a style of play they're not adhering to anymore? Or are players not played in their right positions? Are they not getting the best out of the 22 players on the ground? Have they recruited poorly? Trout joins us in Wood End. He'll have something to say about the Bombers. G'day, Trout.
Hello, Tiger Boys. One for Pat and one for KB. Pat, do you think Essendon will sack Hurd at the end of the season? That would make 3 sack coaches in a row. What sort of a club would do that?
No, that won't.
No,
happen.
I don't think that would
that
sack
won't
him.
Happen.
All right, and KB, free agency. We need conditions. Now, a player can move down from any club on the ladder. He can go to any club he wants. But a player that wants to go from a bottom club and move up should only be allowed to go up a maximum of 4 clubs on the end of the year position of the ladder. That would then help the bottom clubs.
There's not much free agency in that, though, is there?
I don't like the idea that you can just veto a player where he wants to play. Because my thinking on this is that the player gets drafted and he has to go to a club. He's got no choice in that whatsoever. And then whilst you're playing during your playing career, in maybe the first 6 years of your career, then at any stage a club can say, you know what, we got you here. Not that you wanted to come here in the first place, but now we're tapping you on the shoulder and we're going to offload you.
Yep.
And you're going to Brisbane, or you're going to West Coast, or you're going to Richmond, or you're going to Carlton. I mean, it seems very, very tough, far as I'm concerned, that you have no say that you go to the club, and then you're going to have no say that the club offloads you. Doesn't seem right to me, Pat.
No, well, I mean, if you have free agency, you have free agency, and that is that you can be released from the club.
Yep.
and you go to the club that wants you.
Well, that's on the back of the fact that you're being drafted. We'll take a break. Let's go straight back to our callers, along with Patrick Smith. Andrew joins us in Nidri. G'day, Andrew.
Thank you, Kev, for taking my call again.
Pleasure.
Essendon will win the premiership this year. It'll win the VFL premiership. They're sitting second, 24 points, and that's the best result they've had for years in the reserves. And that's a big plus. And there's probably about 10 players they could select, which are not playing at the moment. 9 of them are probably nearly ready to go, and 1, David Myers, is probably a little bit away.
Okay, all is not lost.
We are coming up to the 10 o'clock news, but a bit of positivity.
All is not lost for Andrew, no.
Not lost in the seniors with players coming back, and also they can win the reserves grand final, the VFL grand final as well. Pat, we'll speak shortly.
And I'm thrilled you found the secret, Kevin.
Coming up, this man has found the secret. Mark Leishman's going to join us. Australian golfer ready to take on the US Open Golf Championship.